The pig swim was hard, and I had to really go deep to really pull it through, because I got really cold, freezing, shivering. And when I get this cold, I always start counting my strokes, because I know that every stroke will take me further to the goal. I mean, it was very interesting to see everyone at Bali, because me and Peter and you guys were the only one who had done swimrun. And you could see the how nervous people are about swimming with the shoes, and how do you do that, and all the questions around it. And it's trying to get people to understand it's not so hard. It's just to get out there and test it. You can swim with any kind of shoes. So it is not so hard, but I understand the feeling before you have tried it. So it's try and communicate with people that it's not so hard. Just get out and try it.
That was Annika Eriksson, five-time World Swimrun Ertiller Swimrun World Champion. And this is episode 7 of the Swim Smooth podcast. Well, good afternoon, good morning, good evening, wherever it is, then whatever time it is, wherever you are in the world. My name is Paul Newsome, and with me today is Adam Young, and we are Swim Smooth. This is our 7th episode of the Swim Smooth podcast. It's a pleasure to have you here listening to us. We hope you've enjoyed the shows prior to this one, and we would like to start off, wouldn't we, Adam, with a little bit of a Christmas message, a little bit of a thank you, and good tidings for the Christmas season. We're hoping this podcast will be out before 2018 Christmas. Adam, do you like to add anything to us? And welcome, Adam.
Oh, good morning. Yes, it's a bit like the Queen's speech, isn't it? This sort of Christmas message. It's a bit overblown, maybe. But
I was hoping it would be.
No, that's right. I mean, obviously, Christmas is just a week away now. In real time, by the time we get this out, it'll probably be a couple more days closer. And it's obviously a busy time of year for nearly everyone in the Western world. Build up to that with all, you know, obviously all the present buying and all the kids stuff and schools finishing. And yeah, it's, I really enjoy it this time of year. I don't know about yourself, Paul. Obviously, I remember coming to spend Christmas once in Australia and it being a very strange experience. Obviously, in the Northern Hemisphere, it tends to be pretty cold and wet in the UK. I think it was 36 degrees on Christmas Day in Perth. Just didn't feel like Christmas. Sorry, Aussies. I know that's a slightly strange thing to say, but I think sometimes you just want it cold, you know?
Absolutely. You guys are going to hate me for saying this, but on Christmas Day here, the forecast is for 33 degrees Celsius, beautiful blue skies, sunny skies. And then you're going to hate me even more for saying, I wish I was home in the UK. I get really down at this time of year when we stay here in Perth in West Australia, and that's no disrespect to the sand gropers, as they call them over here in West Australia. It is a beautiful part of the world. I wouldn't choose to live here otherwise, but it's just for those 2 or 3 days over Christmas where I wish I could be snuggled up in front of the TV, you know, cold outside, going for an early morning jog or something like that in the drizzle. All the stuff that you're thinking I want to get away from right now, that's the stuff that I'm actually craving. And you might just think I'm saying that. I'm sure you'd probably prefer to be maybe sat on a beach like we will be doing on Christmas Day, but it is the God's honest truth. I wish I was home, whether that be back in the UK or indeed where my wife Michelle is from over in Canada. It's just Christmas does, you're absolutely right, Adam. Christmas does just feel a bit funny here down under.
Yeah, I guess it was designed to be a midwinter festival, wasn't it? Without, you know, most cultures have a midwinter sort of festival to help them get through the darkness and the cold. So yeah, it's good. And it's also, you know, obviously there's festivities themselves. It's a great time of year just to maybe take a bit of time and think about the previous year, what you've achieved, what you've done, what went well, what went badly, you know, and obviously looking ahead to next year. And that's obviously what we're doing within Swim Smooth, and then also with our own particular athletic endeavors between all of us, you know, having our own personal thoughts about that.
So what are you actually going to be doing then, Adam, over Christmas with respect to your training? Are you, do you have plans to train? Are you going to take a big break? I know I used to always really enjoy, obviously, the day of Christmas Day off, albeit that being said, I'd still sneak out for a cheeky little 30-minute jog or something. I wouldn't take it too seriously, though. I'd have my Santa's hat on and be jogging along, like I say, in the mist and the drizzle, et cetera, up there in North Wales, which is where my mum lives. But what about yourself? Are you going to take a full day off? Are you going to take a week off? What are you going to do?
That's a good question, isn't it? I'm going to play it by ear because we're actually fairly busy. We're traveling around seeing family in different locations. We have a couple of days away ourselves in the mountains in Cumbria, in the Lake District, which would be fantastic. Try and take some running shoes, but you never know about the weather up there. Could be completely sort of snowed in. So we'll see. I think just, you know, getting a little bit of me time in here and there when I can, in amongst it all. Yeah. So that's my kind of plan, really. How about yourself?
Yeah. Like I say, I'm sure I probably won't be able to do anything on Christmas morning. Obviously got the two young kiddies. Jackson's 9 this year and Isla is 7. So we'll be celebrating, but we are going to be going down to the beach. They have what we call an orphans Christmas over here. So everyone piles down to Cottesloe Beach or North Cottesloe Beach, which is where we go to our surf lifesaving club, Northcott Surf Lifesaving Club. And we're going to pile down there for this orphans Christmas morning. And the idea of it is that a lot of people are in the same shoes as us. They're expats, maybe they've moved over here, they love the lifestyle, but they're missing family at this time of year, and they want to go down to the beach and just maybe have that shared experience. So that's what we'll be doing, and I'm sure if we're down at the beach, I'll definitely be hopping in for a bit of an open water swim. It might just literally just be get wet and freshen up a little bit, and then it'll be back to the house. We've actually got Joe Skipper, Ironman champion, over here with us at the moment. Joe came 7th overall in Kona recently, as a professional athlete, that is. An absolute monster of a man in Kona. He swam just under 51 minutes. He rode 4 hours and 15 minutes on that Kona course, just absolutely mind-bogglingly quick, and then ran, I think it was just a shade over 2 hours 53. So a monster time there from Joe. And Joe's actually training here. He's over visiting at the moment with Laura. We're coaching him on the swimming aspect at the moment. He's going to be sharing Christmas Day with us. And I'm quite excited about that because it means that once we come back to the house and we're literally throwing a shrimp on the barbie, I'm lucky to have an endless pool and to probably get that cranking up. I'm sure we'll have maybe a few drunken races. Don't try that at home, obviously. Drunken races against the endless pool, and we'll be battling it out there. But it's that's all pretty good stuff.
Tell us a little bit about how's it going with Joe, because I think you've been doing a bit of swimming with him personally, jumping in the water. Is that right?
That's correct. Yeah. So Joe turned up for the first session last Friday to our red mist session. So we got a red mist endurance session on a Wednesday morning at 5:30, and then we repeat the same session at 9:30 on a Friday morning. So that session runs for an hour and a half. He was literally thrown in at the deep end, jet lag and all, for a 5K solid swim session. And let me tell you, I was very, very impressed with how he handled that. It's an interesting one, because one of the primary reasons Joe is over here is simply because he feels that he would serve to improve his swimming even further. And yet when you watch him swimming, yes, he's a little bit untidy and unkempt around the edges. But as we talk about, especially for open water swimming, it doesn't necessarily matter how pretty you look in the water. It's obviously about how effective you are. So for anybody who can swim under 51 minutes and be in that lead pack in Kona, he's got to be doing more right than he's doing wrong. So it was interesting watching him on that first session. I took a good look at the symmetry of his stroke. And we talked a lot on Monday when I did a video analysis session with him about the timing of his stroke with respect to his breathing. And we're making some tweaks and changes. And he's coming on leaps and bounds. Let me tell you, it's scary how quick this guy makes improvements and how quickly he challenges on. So we had our first session ourselves together, which was on Tuesday. We did the infamous 10x400s red mist session. We started, for everyone's reference and listening pleasure, we started off doing 4 400s at 125, holding 125 per 100 meters with 20 seconds rest between each one. We were doing that using using the Marlin. So we're actually set up with this Marlin swimming meter. We both had the same session reading out to us. So we just started at the same time. We were swimming in parallel. We did our first four 400s on holding 125. We then dropped it down to three 400s holding 124, two 400s holding 123, and then the final final 400 meters holding 122. And, you know, Joe was there matching me stroke for stroke. He is a little bit tired. I don't think he'll mind me saying in the final couple of 400s, and he actually jumped into my lane and just hung on to my feet for that. But let me tell you that, like I say, he makes this improvement at a final later knot. So we did that on Tuesday, and then yesterday we jumped in for our 2K swim every other day challenge. And Joe had already preceded that with a 3.5K CSS development session where we did get quite fruity. Some of the target times that I had the guys swimming were, you know, sub 115 per 100 meters. So he did the 3.5K, and then we'd arrange for him to stay in the water for me to jump in and do a side-by-side simultaneous 2K challenge swim. And it wasn't my fastest time. I've done it now 21 times. If you've been hearing us talking about this 2K challenge, the notion is that every other day you try and get in and just do a very simple 2K straight swim, no drills, no fins, no pool boy, no paddles. You just swim. It wants to be steady state, so around about CSS plus 5 or 6 seconds per 100 meters. And over the course of weeks and months, the idea is that the times start to come down, but not because you're trying to do it as a time trial, simply because you're actually adapting and developing and getting better. And we did that particular swim. I told him, I think we'd maybe be able to try and hit 28 minutes, so 14 minutes per kilometer or 124 per 100. And that's exactly where we started off. But then it just built and it got quicker and quicker and quicker. And we were going literally just stroke for stroke. And let me tell you, Adam, it might not be my fastest time. It was my second fastest time in the last 21. We went just a shade over 27 minutes. So what is that? 13 and a half minutes per kilometer. Yeah, we're talking about 121 per 100 meters average pace. But it was the way we swam it. Now, I'm notorious for going off way too fast. And my very fastest swim that I've done in this 21 period was going off way, way too quick. I think I went out in the first 500 in probably just a shade over 6 minutes and proceeded to blow up like I normally do and slow down and have a terrible swim. It's still my fastest one to date, but it felt terrible. Whereas this one was the complete opposite. I literally left it in Joe's hands to sort of pace it out. And being the diesel engine that he is, you don't get seventh in Kona without pacing yourself out properly. And that's exactly what we did. We just went stroke for stroke. I let him lead the way. And it just gradually got quicker and quicker and quicker. So our last 500 meters was done in just over 6 minutes, I think, or 6 minutes 20 or something. Something like that, as opposed to doing it the wrong way around. And yeah, it was a great experience for me, really, to actually have an athlete of Joe's caliber there side by side. And what was nice, Joe actually reached out to us probably about 6 months ago, mentioning that he'd found Swim Smooth about 2 years prior and has actually been following, on his own advice, the Swim Smooth guru in the last 2 years. So that was quite a nice sensation and feeling, slightly flattering for the old ego, Adam, I have to say, that he'd actually found us on that he'd found us online and was following our advice. And a lot of people have been telling people that the reason he'd improved so much is from literally just following the Swim Smooth guru. He likes the idea of having the structure of the training sessions, the incorporation of the drills, and making sure he's doing the right type of training to improve his technique and improve his efficiency there. So yeah, he asked in about 6 months ago. We started this dialogue about, you know, he's maybe going to come over to Perth and spend some time training with us over here. And, you know, with a lot of these elite athletes, I love the opportunity to work with elite athletes coming over here. We've had previous occasions of some very high profile athletes come and stay with me over here in Perth for, you know, anywhere between 2 weeks and, in Joe's case, around about 2 months. And it's always a privilege to work with them, to share some of the experience. And, you know, 9 times out of 10, they're very open to taking on board the advice and make some big inroads with their racing. So yeah, fantastic. And like I say, we're going to be having lunch together on Christmas Day, throwing that shrimp on the barbie, maybe sharing a eggnog or two. And yeah, it's great having him over here.
Yeah, fantastic. Wow. Yeah, we'll have to take a bit of video and get it out onto social media. It'd be great to see him in action.
Definitely. And I'm a little bit scared. At the moment, I feel like I'm holding my own, but it's going to only be maybe three or four more sessions where I'm going to be the one who's hanging on for dear life and going forwards from there. But there we go.
You'll be fine.
Yeah. We'll see. But any final advice then, Adam, on Christmas Day itself or that Christmas period? Would you be recommending that people take some time off completely? Would you recommend that they keep things ticking over? Is it the same for everybody? What would be your advice and ruminations on that?
It's an interesting one, isn't it? I think there's almost like two extremes you could look at this from. You could, you know, if you've been training your ass off, you know, if you're a serious, you know, trainer, you've been working really hard all year, you know, you're going to be training hard next year, then I would, you know, don't be afraid to take some time off and have a complete switch off and have a real reflect about what you've been doing. And, you know, just stepping out of that routine is very powerful, isn't it? It makes you look at things in a slightly different way, almost like break some habits that you put in, albeit you're going to be restarting them again soon. So I think that you could certainly almost take a complete break if you're in that situation. Or if you feel like you haven't done very much, you've been slacking yourself, you can't wait to get going, maybe you've got some time off work over Christmas, and there are some good opportunities, then why not? You know, get out there, hit some sessions, do a little bit of training, get back into it. It can be a nice opportunity as well, depending on your life situation and everything else. It is a very busy time of year. There's lots of different pressures in lots of different ways, work, family, culture, life, all sorts of things hitting you. So don't be afraid to take that time off and give yourself a little bit of a mental break, and then, you know, get back to it in the new year. I myself, I'm hoping to get a little bit of training in. We've got a few clear days here and there. So as you know, Paul, it's been a very busy end of year at Swim Smooth. We're going to talk a little bit about the next few months heading into next year. So I'm looking forward to a bit of a reflection period as well over that week or so. We should get our coach Emma Brunning on. She's the queen of reflection.
Absolutely.
Probably need to explain that one a little bit better. Emma helps us a lot with our coach education. She's obviously a brilliant coach. In fact, I think we should have her on the podcast talking a bit about the coaches and how we train them. She's a really, really interesting person to talk to about all things life and perspective and everything. And I'm sure she would be recommending we have a little reflective break now over Christmas to make sure you're heading off on the right tracks in the new year. Yeah,
definitely. I think the key message there is really just sort of go with the flow a little bit. And like you say, if you do have the opportunity to get a little bit in and it feels like the right thing to do, then don't be afraid to do that. But equally, if you shouldn't feel guilty about taking some time off. I know I grew up with a message banging into my brain that, remember Sebastian Coe, Adam, obviously one of the world's greatest ever middle distance runners. The thing that used to fly around was on Christmas Day, Sebastian Coe used to go out and do a really hard training session. Apparently, this is folklore. Maybe it did happen, maybe it didn't happen. But folklore tells us that Sebastian Coe used to go out on Christmas Day, do one of his hardest sessions of the year, because he knew that all his rivals would actually be sat at home getting stuck into the Christmas turkey and putting their feet up. And, you know, that sort of message has definitely lived with me throughout my entire youth and junior life. And, you know, almost the fear and guilt of then not doing something like that. But I think my favorite thing to do, like I say, you know, this year it'll be going for a quick open water dip, not a structured session and stuff. If I'm in the UK, I'd definitely get out for a 30-minute jog or maybe even just a 20-minute jog or something like that. I just love being on the streets in the UK on Christmas morning when it's all quiet and nobody's around, and you just feel like you've got your space to yourself and you can just really take that, you know, that moment of introversion, introspection, sort of thinking and reflecting. It's a great time of year. So yeah. Anyway, but I think the main thing, yep, do what feels right over the Christmas period. So let's talk a little about 2019. It's coming up very, very quickly indeed. What have we got on the plans, Adam? Obviously, we've just recently started the podcast. It's the first time we've ever delved into and delivered some detail about what we've got coming up ahead. What can you tell us? What can we let out to the world?
Well, it's a good question. We actually have something we can't talk about. We have a new partnership we're going to be announcing in January, which is really quite exciting for us. But so that's been keeping us busy for the last few months, getting prepared for that. But the beginning of February, we have obviously the big trip to Perth for the coaches coming out there for their training. Very much looking forward to that. You're totally set at the Perth end for us to arrive?
I am indeed. Yeah, I'm very much looking forward to it. The coaches this time are going to be arriving. We've actually configured it such that the very final day is the date of the Rottnest Channel Swim. I think I mentioned this in a couple of episodes prior, but the Rottnest Channel Swim is a 19.7 kilometer mass participation marathon swimming event across to the Rottnest Island. And we have around about 3.5 shark infested indeed. In fact, a shark did actually swim underneath the field last year, and they ended up having to evacuate, I think, around about 250 swimmers who were within a 1 kilometer radius of that shark passing through. So that was quite a scary thought. It is very much shark infested out there. Luckily, there's never been in the sports or in the event's history, which I think now extends to around about 22 years, if I'm correct, there's never been an incident, but that's not, God forbid, that's not to say there couldn't be something happen. But the event itself is an absolute crowning moment over here in Western Australia. I think it's one of the primary reasons why I've been fortunate, as I have, to run a very successful squad coaching program over here in one-to-one video analysis, because everyone sort of builds up to this particular event. It's always held on the third Saturday in February. And this year, the coaches course will actually culminate. So the coaches will be here for 2 weeks with us. Emma Brunning will be over. Yourself will be over, Adam. We'll have four or five brilliant coaches come and do their 2 week certification with us. So these coaches have already been pre-selected. So they had to go through an application process to get on our initial 3 day course. Our next one of those will be held in, we're looking at running one actually over here in Australasia. We haven't done one since 2013. And that's probably going to be towards the end of February, start of March, and following on from that, we'll be over in Mallorca, as we often are, between the 23rd and the 25th of May, running a 3 day coach education course. And that's really the sort of foundation steps for coaches. It gives us a chance to delve into what Swim Smooth is all about, some of our tips and methodologies, etc., and for us to work out, you know, if the coaches that apply for those courses, of which we often have 20 people sit in the course, from around about 100-150 applications usually for that particular course. We have to knock back quite a few people, unfortunately. We have to delve into their applications and make sure they're going to be the right fit. And then once they're over for that 3 day course, some of the coaches are just there purely for their own educational purposes. Some of them particularly express that they'd like to come over to Perth and do the 2 week certification course. So that's what we've got coming up and culminating in the Rottnest Channel Swim. So it'd be quite cool, Adam, to get some of them involved in that particular event, won't it?
I was going to say, if they don't swim the whole 20Ks, are we not going to certify them? Is that?
I think that's the final assessment. That's exactly right. You have to swim it by yourself. Maybe with some chum around your waist or something like that to sort of really test the waters literally over here. Now, of course, we wouldn't.
Obviously, we're not without any preparation.
Silly as that.
No,
not any preparation. Yeah, exactly right. But you can actually do this event either as a solo, as a duo swimmer, or as a quad, a team of four, with the idea being that if you're doing it either as a duo or as a quad, your teammates actually sit on the boat and you're literally doing a tag team across. So when it comes up to the end of your swimming time, which might be you determine the swimming time, it might be some of the faster teams actually transition every 30 seconds, believe it or not, Adam. So they're holding, these are the guys who've been to the Olympics and holding some crazy quick swimming speeds. They'll transition every 30 seconds. So imagine doing a 30 second, essentially a 50 meter relay over and over again for 20 kilometers between the four of you. You know, they might be sprinting, but that's an endurance event all in itself for those guys. Yeah. Some of the other relay swimmers, they'll transition every 5, 6, 7 minutes or so. But that's how they get across there, and diving into the water, tagging your partner and then setting off. And what's really weird about the duo event is the fact that you do it with somebody. I've done it with my wife once, and we did really, really well. I think we finished second duo overall that year. And my very first experience of the event was in 2003, where I did it with a salty sea dog, let's call him. Tom was his name. He was just over 60 years of age, brilliant, brilliant open water swimmer. And we did that particular event together. And it's really weird because you're doing it as a team, but you never actually meet or stop and talk to your teammate because you're tagging your hands and you're going again. So you're either in the water or or you're on the boat, but you never actually see each other. It's quite a weird scenario, but there we go. So yeah, so that's coming up, a 2-week certification course. And as we released in episode 6 of the Swim Smooth podcast, we have Artem from Russia. He's going to be coming out. Hopefully he's going to be popping over at that same period in time. So this is our lucky prize winner, Adam. I remember it was you who came up with this idea of actually inviting a very lucky person at random to come over and spend a week with us, all expenses paid, over here in Perth. So Artem's going to be coming over from Russia. He's going to be doing some one-to-one video analysis with me, soaking up the Swim Smooth squad, the Perth squad experience, and just getting involved with everything we do over here. So yeah, exciting times coming up.
It's going to be a busy first few months of the year. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Absolutely. And I think we've further into the year, we're hoping that we'll obviously have another trip over to the US, maybe Canada again as well, and run another 3-day coach education course over there. So if you are coaching and you are listening out to this, now would be a brilliant time to drop us over either an email or simply visit the swimsmooth.com website and look at this coaches link to make sure you've got your applications in, or make us aware that you'd be interested in coming on one of these courses, because we love meeting new coaches and we love getting involved with all of that.
Yeah, there's something called the Coaches Network on the Swim Smooth website. If you go to the, as Paul said, if you go to the coaches area, you'll see some various links there, becoming a Swim Smooth coach, and also the Swim Smooth Network, which is just a little sign up, which we ask you to complete. And then you'll get invited to apply for future coaching courses that we're running, the 3-day course being the next thing. So yeah, like Paul says, we're hoping to run one possibly east coast of Australia coming up soon, the US, and also in Mallorca in Europe. So 3 courses coming up soon.
The Mallorca course and the experience there is definitely well worth thinking about if you are in Europe. We tagged that on prior to, so we run it on the 23rd, 24th and 25th of May. And then on the 26th, one of the best events I've ever had the privilege of being involved with, which is the Best Fest. So it's the best festival, as they call it, of open water swimming there in Mallorca. And it's literally like the Tour de France of open water swimming. Every day you do a different distance, you accumulate points, or you accumulate your time over the course of the week. And there's an overall prize for the fastest cumulative time at the end of the week. I was lucky to actually win that 2 years ago, and I actually finished second to the guy who finished second the prior year last year. So I'll hopefully be tussling with him. They have age group categories for that. But what's really cool about it is on 3 of those particular events, they actually have some of the world's fastest open water swimmers. So the national teams come over, and you literally get to race head to head with them, or rather, you see them disappearing off into the distance and really appreciating just how fast these guys and girls can swim. So yeah, so that'll be immediately after the 3-day coaches course in Mallorca, and something very much to look forward to.
So Paul, who have we got on the show today?
Well, this one's a very exciting one for me. I was lucky to race with Annika Eriksson, both in the Örtelö in Sweden at the World Championships back in September, and just recently, just a couple of weekends ago, over in Bali as well. So Annika Eriksson, for those of you who don't know, is 5 times world champion in the swim run Örtelö World Championships. And she's going to be joining us today with her partner, her female partner in racing, Kristin Larsson. So Kristin and Annika have actually raced together in this sport of swim run for 2016, 2017, 2018. They are undefeated over that distance during that period of time. So they're going to share their insights with us very shortly about the race and where the sport is going. And I think I'm hoping for those of you listening who may be curious about swim run, because it is very much at that stage now in the sport's development and evolution, whereby it was seen very much as a fringe sport, even as recently as 2 or 3 years ago. I looked at it and thought, this is a weird looking thing. Why are people swimming with pool boy and paddles and that type of thing? To now becoming a bit of a curiosity. People are starting to see these events pop up a lot more frequently. And we're going to delve into to what the sport's all about, what equipment you might need, what events there are dotted around the planet, and hear a little bit more from Annika and Kristin take us through. So yeah, Adam, it should be pretty cool, hey?
Fantastic. Yeah, it's an exciting new sport. I've never done one myself, but as you know, I've watched several now. I've watched yourselves compete. And it is a fascinating sport, particularly with the team dynamic, the relationship between the two partners racing together. I think it's pretty unique as a as an endurance sport in that regard. And as we're going to hear Annika and Kristen talking about, how they bounce off each other, how they help each other in different sections, how they go through highs and lows and support each other. It's fascinating. And it's, as I say, pretty unique, I think, in the endurance world. So, yeah, let's hear from them and get started, hey?
Absolutely. Here we go. Let's hear from Annika and Kristen. So joining us on the show today, Annika Eriksson and Kristen Larsson over there in Sweden. Ladies, how are you today?
Just very good, thank you.
I heard you've just been for a bit of a swim session, is that correct?
Yeah, we started now at 6 o'clock in the morning, our time, and it's been a nice swim for an hour. It's good to do before work, so.
So ladies, you are triple world champions at the Ertila Swim Run World Championships, having won it in 2016, 17, and of course to this year in 2018. Let's first start off with a bit of congratulations for that. That must feel amazing to be racing at that level and that consistently over the last 3 years.
Yeah, we're very happy that we managed to do this, and especially this year when we had hard competitions, but we really put together everything we had to this year and pulled it through. So we're very pleased with that.
That's great. That's great. Now, of course, Annika, you've also won it the event in 2015 and then also as a mixed team in 2013. For many people who maybe don't know what swim run is, we're going to get dug into this shortly. You can actually race this event with a partner, or rather you have to race this event with a partner. You can either do it as two guys together, two girls together, or obviously as a mixed team. So one guy, one girl who can actually race together. So you obviously won the first event or your first mixed championships in 2013. Can you take us back to that? Because if I'm correct in thinking, 2012 was actually your first ever Ertila Swim Run World Championships, and then you came along in 2013 and then won the World Championships.
Yeah, I mean, I did my first in 2012, and I mean, everything has evolved in terms of gear, what you're using, and how you set up for the race. So, I mean, in 2012, I didn't use any pool boy, floaty, as I know you call it in Australia, or paddles. And I had like a camelback on my carrying the liquid in the back, which was hard for the swimming. And then for 2013, we improved things. We removed the camelback. I put on paddles and a floaty, and we also included a tether, a rope in between us, which just improved massively and helped us. We could help each other in the race. So, and then from this, from 2013 now until 2018, I mean, now we have wetsuits that are designed for swim run, or more designed for the run, and you get some help in the swims. So everything has evolved. Also, shoes has become better. So, and this makes the times on the much faster all the time. Every year, it's just been improving.
Absolutely. Of course, you set the world record this year in 2018 over there, and which is obviously fantastic in itself. We had some pretty good conditions. And as I've been mentioning on the podcast over the last couple of shows, I'm very proud of the fact that I got to race here in 2018. And it looked like I had the most idyllic conditions that you've ever had in the in that particular event. And tell us a little bit about how ideal it was in 2018, just to make me feel a little bit bad about, you know, maybe I didn't have the full hardcore experience that I should have done.
It's too bad you wasn't there in 2017, because it was a very different race. And as it was this year with this, it was all quiet on the water. It was sunshine, not too warm, around 18 degrees. And I've never seen it like that in the archipelago before.
No, and I mean, both me and Christine are quite cold in the water, and it sort of improved and affects our swimming, and we don't swim that well when we get cold. So, and this year the temperature was around 17, 18, and we didn't freeze anywhere, I think. So this helped us a lot, I would say. So, yeah.
Yeah, definitely. I vividly remember, as we've discussed, Annika, myself and Annika have just raced the Bali swim run up in beautiful Bali in Indonesia. And I was mentioning there that I had two vivid memories of the Ertila race this year. One was eventually running side by side with you guys at the end of Urna or Orno. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that correctly, the half marathon run. And we were running up the hill together, and my partner Andy was dragging me along at that point. I died maybe 5 or 6 times at that point. I just kept coming back, having some food, coming back, dying, coming back, dying, and so on and so forth. And we're at the end of the run, the half marathon run. And as we run up the slope, we saw you ahead of us. We caught you guys. But as soon as we turned off onto the hardcore trail again, my legs completely gave way. And I vividly remember you both of you just come dancing past us on the rocks. And I was just, I was totally transfixed by A, how quickly you were moving, and B, how bad my legs felt. And it was just, it was a key moment in time for me at that point. I think we've been racing for about 7 hours or something. And I believe I did some calculations, and I think in the last hour, maybe hour and 10 minutes, I think you ended up putting around about 8 minutes into us at that point. So that was one of my memorable moments. And the other memorable moment, as I shared with you, Annika, was this strange sensation of just seeing, I was thinking about getting these Solomon swim run shoes leading up to the event. And I didn't actually get these shoes. They're black and blue. And I just remember them. I didn't know whose legs they were on, but I remember them dancing past me as I was in one of this sort of hallucination part of the race, when I started to really struggle. And of course, it was your feet just dancing past me at that point on the rocks there as well. Can you share us any quick tips, maybe if I come back again in 2019 or 2020, any quick tips on just how good and how well you actually jump over those rocks? Because listeners, if you've never been over to the Swedish or the Stockholm Archipelago, the topography there is just absolutely incredible. It wasn't a particularly hilly race, but just being able to run over these rocks, it's like no terrain on earth that I've ever come across beforehand. It's very, very slippy, very, very challenging. And the risk of rolling an ankle or falling over and breaking your, I don't know, your knee or your leg or something like that is very, very high. So have you got any quick tips for us, Annika, on how you do that?
I mean, it's just training, I guess. We train quite a lot in the summertime on these islands just to get used to the terrain and on the rocks and everything, so we can be fast on these trails. And I guess it's hard for foreigners to get used to that. I don't know how you could train for that, actually, except being in the environment.
I think that's probably the key tip, isn't it? Maybe to come over a little bit earlier and go and do some training around, is it Hellesgården or Hellsgården over there in Stockholm?
Yes, that's the mecca of swim run in Stockholm. Yes, that's where you need to train. But for us, I mean, at that time, Urna, that's the long half marathon. It's sort of asphalt you run on, and it's quite boring and nothing is happening. But for us, when we sort of come into the forest again, then it's sort of you get happy again. It's more happening, and it's then when you get the energy back and you can start running and push hard. So for us, that's
it's our natural environment.
Exactly, that's we enjoy that.
Totally, totally. Adam, I can't begin to tell you, in fact, I probably have told you many times, just how much I was hurting at that point within the race. Can you recall me telling you about that?
Oh, yeah, but what I can't quite get over is how easy the conditions were for you, Paul. I want to see you there in a tough year, it sounds like. Sounds like you had it easy, dude.
I think I certainly did. Myself and Annika have just raced, as I mentioned beforehand, up in Bali at the swim run race up there. Much shorter event, totaling just around about a quarter of the distance of what we did in Sweden back in September. Annika, how did you find the event there in Bali? Did you enjoy it?
I enjoyed it very much, and it was great to racing in an exotic environment. But I was a little bit nervous about how I would be affected by the heat. And especially since everyone that was entering the race the day before, everyone's drinking liquid with different things in it. We were just looking at each other, Peter and I, oh, is this something we have to do? but then I was happy that I was able to race as good as I wanted on the day. And yeah, it was going really well. So.
Yeah, well, you smoked us there again up in Bali. It was fantastic to experience that race alongside you there. And I'll never forget on this particular event, running up alongside you after the first swim, and you just very, very casually just said, "Oh, so nice of you to join us." And so we hammered on against in the heat. And I think the official stats for that day was, I think it's 31, 32 ambient air temperature, around about 88, 90% humidity. And the water temperature, I believe, was about 33 or 34 degrees Celsius. So completely different to what you'd be experiencing there in Sweden. And am I correct in thinking as well, was that the first swim run event that you've done without one of these specialist swim run wetsuits, which we'll get into shortly?
No, there is actually a race. Well, there are some races in the middle of the summer in Sweden you can do without a wetsuit, where you're allowed not to have a wetsuit. Because some of the races you are compulsory to have a wetsuit on. But there are some races that are shorter and then you can race without them. And that is much nicer if you don't have to have it, I would
say. Totally.
It makes the run so much easier. So,
how do you compare? And this question is to both of you, really. How do you compare with and without a wetsuit, just generally speaking, for the swimming aspect? Are you both faster wearing the wetsuit, or are you a little bit slower with the wetsuit? How does that actually affect you?
Of course, running, you always prefer to run without the wetsuit, but today the wetsuit, they are. The one that we use from Arc Swimrun, it's optimized for running also. So it's like having short running tights on you. So it's not that bad as it could be 3 years ago when we were running in our swimming wetsuits.
Yeah.
Totally. It really sounds like the sport has moved on and evolved quite significantly since its inception in around about 2006, 2007 there. And we'll get dug into that, because I'm sure quite a few of our listeners would be interested to, know a little bit more about the events, what they entail, what equipment you need, etc., and how to move that forwards. So just before we get dug into a little bit more about what Swim Run actually is and, what sort of it motivates both of you to do these events and where you think the sport's going, tell us a little bit about your respective sporting backgrounds. Have you always done swimming? Have you always done running? Have you ever been involved in triathlon, which many new swim runners tend to come into the sport from?
Well, my background is I started to swim when I was 5, and I was swimming on a very competitive level up until I was 14, I think. Then I stopped swimming because I thought it was just too much. We trained. I come from a swimming club in Sweden where we have one of the hardest swimming training with too much distance and not too much quality, I would say. So I was sort of fed up when I was 14. So after that, I did some water polo, normal training, basically. And then I did some triathlon when I was around 20. I have tried an Ironman just to try and finish it. And that's when I finished my Ironman. I also running marathon and so on. That's when I sort of stumbled across RTLR and thought, this is an excellent challenge I want to test. And then I just got hooked on swim run and just started to love it.
Totally. So it definitely sounds, Annika, like you gravitated more towards the distance events. Would you describe yourself as more of an endurance athlete, or do you feel like you've got a peak of speed?
I'm more of an endurance. I don't have any speed for shorter distance at all. So no, it has to be longer if I should be performing well. Yeah.
We often refer to that here at Swim Smooth as being a diesel engine as opposed to being a petrol engine. So, you've got that ability to be on the slow burn, but a very, very long period of time. Yeah. So, and that's definitely my experience of racing alongside you. You just got that steady pace where it's just unrelenting and just keep going and going. And I think that's where ultimately we fell foul over in Bali, myself and Brad. We're trying to try to catch up with you after that first swim where Brad got speared on a fishing line and we had some ground to make up, but we knew that even though you might have suffered a little bit with the heat, as as I certainly did as well. We knew that you'd actually be strong right to the very, very end, and that was scaring us the whole way around the course. So when you guys, whatever you guys were doing, we were trying to literally mimic. We could see you up ahead, and we were trying to mimic every little move that you made. And you know, if you walked on some of the steeper sections, and they were really quite steep. So listeners, don't think that's an easy way out. This course was very, very challenging. So when Annika and Peter were walking, we followed suit and walked as well. So we knew you'd be there to the very bitter end for sure. And Kristen, for yourself, what is your sporting background?
I grew up in the very northern part of Sweden, and I was racing in cross-country skiing for many years. And when I started university, I found adventure racing, which is you race up to 6 days and nights. You do biking, paddling, and running. So I, for 10 years, I was traveling around the globe doing these expedition races. And in 2015, I became a mother. And after
congratulations.
Thank you. and then I felt I want to do something different. And my partner, Daniel, he won Ötle just a few weeks after. And then I got inspired that he had the same background as me. And if he could do well in that sport, then I wanted to try it too.
Wow, that's a very formidable family then in that case, if your husband or your partner there is one Ötila as well. Have you guys raced together?
Yeah, we do a few races together. And we know each other very well, so it's fun to race. But also I like to race with other people and, yeah, not doing too much things together.
For sure,
or
for
race
sure.
Against each other.
Yeah, that's always exciting. Totally. Okay, so if for the listeners listening in then, Annika and Kristen, when people are sort of contemplating this new sport, some of our listeners probably never heard of it. So the majority of our listeners are going to be in the swimming, triathlon, endurance sport background. And sometimes when you see this event televised, you see people swimming with a pool boy and with paddles. And the initial thinking is, you know, what the heck is going on? A lot of people find pool boy and paddles especially to make them a lot faster when they're swimming. So the initial impression is this race for real? Are these guys just trying to cheat? You know, tell us a little bit about the background, Annika. You when we were in Bali, you made this amazing description about the history of the swim run movement and Ötle itself. Tell us a little bit about that and where is it all generated? Where does it come from?
Well, I mean, the background is it started actually as a drunken bet in 2004. This is in the Stockholm archipelago. It's outside Stockholm, there are thousands of islands. And in the southern part of one of the islands called Utö, there were four guys sitting in a bar. They were looking at a map, which was over the Stockholm archipelago, and looking at it and pointing to Sandhamn, which is in the northern part of the archipelago, and said to each other that, hey guys, we have been going by boat up to Sandhamn, we have been ice skating up to Sandhamn, but would it be possible to swim and run over there without any gear? So these four guys said to each other, yeah, let's try this and see if we can get there. So they teamed up two and two, and the deal was that they had to pass a couple of restaurants or bars, and the first guys that came in, they should order the drinks for the second team, and they had to drink whatever they had ordered, and then they should come along all the way up to Sandhamn, and I don't know if there were some order drinks there as well in the end. And then a couple of weeks later, they did the race, and they managed to do it. All four came to Sandhamn, but when they came to Sandhamn, it's a very nice hotel there, so they were thinking they could sort of sleep there after, doing all the race up there, but it turned out that the hotel was full, so they had to sleep outdoors. But they managed to do this, to come all the way without any gear, just swim and run over all the islands. And so two guys, Mikael Lemmel and Matt Scott, heard about this ranking bet that they had done. And so in 2006, they started up as a race and called it Attila. And I think in 2006, it was 9 teams that entered. They had sort of calling around to get people to try it because no one had heard about it. And I think only 2 teams finished the race that year.
Wow.
And at that time, they had sort of big floating mattresses and they had different gears trying. But the thing was that everything you have from starting line, you have to bring to the finish line. So you have to carry everything you bring with you. So, I mean, that will make it heavy if you have big things with you. So, yeah, and then it sort of have evolved. I think in 2012, when I entered the Attila, then it was the ones who was fastest on computer to that could enter the race. But then in 2013, I think they started this. You had to qualify, have merits and so on to be able to enter the race. So now it's very, very popular to try and get a spot for this race.
It's very difficult indeed. And I think, can you tell us a little bit about the distances involved then? So, and has it always been exactly the same route? Have they always used exactly the same course?
No, I mean, the one that the guys did that was in the opposite direction, Ute to Sandhamn. And I think they wanted to have it back and forth from the start, if I'm correct. But then they realized the longest swim is from Sandhamn. The first swim is the longest. And it's better to have that early in the morning because it's a lot of boats. And for safety reasons, it's better to have it there early on than in the end when, I mean, the field is sort of spreading out with all the competitors. It would be very difficult to have the long swim in the end. And I know also in the beginning they had, you know, the long run, the half marathon.
Yes.
They had bikes on this in the beginning.
Wow.
As well. But this, they also realized that it would be hard with the logistics to have 100 teams. That's 200 bikes that should be going from one point to the other. And the logistics didn't work for them. So they just made it easy and took that away. And just having shoes and wetsuit on, basically.
Wow. And the total cumulative distance then of the event is 75 kilometers, correct?
Yes, it is. But when I did it actually in 2012, it said that it was only 55K of running and 10K of swimming. So for me, that was because I had done a marathon before. I thought that, okay, 42K, 55K of run, yeah, that could be manageable. If it would have been 65, I would have thought it over more thoroughly, I think. So, but then since everyone is having GPS watches now, they sort of said in the end that, okay, this is not only 55K, it's 65K of running and then 10K of swimming. So.
Yeah, absolutely. I went into that particular event. I've never even done a marathon myself before. So I think my longest ever run is just over 30 kilometers. So to go into that, knowing it's going to be 65Ks, it was quite a scary, daunting thought. And like you say, it's very, very challenging to actually qualify for the event these days. The level of and caliber of athletes who are, you know, setting the world records and yourselves, ladies, you know, winning the race so many multiple times, it really is giving a lot of credibility to the sport. So if you sat there listening to this podcast and you're thinking to yourself, you know, I've seen these images on TV. I'm not so sure about the pool boys. It looks a bit funny that they're carrying paddles as well. Make no understatement here that this is a very, very challenging event. And I believe the Guardian newspaper actually rated it as probably the single hardest one-day sporting endurance event in the world, I believe it or not. So, yeah, kudos to you, ladies, for both of you for what you've achieved in the sport and where you've gone to at this point. And I'm sure there's many, many strong years left still ahead there. So how do you go about training for these events, Annika and Kristen? Do you have a set routine? Do you change it up? Does it always look the same throughout the year? Well, how do you go about that?
Well, to start with, we have where we live, we have very good training conditions. I mean, during summertime, although it's maybe only 5 months per year, but we have many small lakes and a big forest. Like in between me and Annika, we have like 3 or 4 lakes. So when we train together, it's easy to team up and we can swim and run to each other and then do very good training. But I mean, of course, our main training is it's either swimming in the pool or running sessions.
And what do those sessions specifically look like? Do you have a set schedule Monday to Friday? Is Monday a technique session or endurance session? Do you go and do intervals on the run on a Tuesday? Obviously, I'm trying to get some tips myself so I can try and be up a little bit higher in the field next time. But blatant tips here, I'm looking for you.
Yeah, I think many people follow a training schedule, but as for me myself, I have my partner who is racing. I have my son and my full-time work, so I can't really follow a schedule. Of course, I have a plan, but I need to just optimize the time where I can find time for training. So the mornings, either I go swimming or I'm the one who take my son to the kindergarten. And I train during lunchtime and bike back and forth to work. So it's more like finding the time in the everyday life for training and also for resting, which I find might be harder.
Yeah, definitely. I think, you know, given the level that you're both racing at, it's absolutely incredible that you both got full-time jobs. Annika, you've got a PhD in medical biochemistry, haven't you? Is that correct?
Yeah, that's true, yes.
Yeah, so obviously a busy family life as well.
Yes, I have two daughters that are now 10 and 12. They're starting to, getting older to take care more of themselves. I don't have to pick them up at school and like I did before. So it makes things easier, of course, but it's a lot of things to handle all their activities and manage to, the work full time. And I have, it takes like, 45 minutes to get to work, but I use that time for training, either running or biking, which without that, I wouldn't have time to get my training done, I would say. So.
Yeah, absolutely. So definitely about scheduling and fitting it in, just trying to get that that routine dialed in for sure. And you mentioned to me, Annika, when we were over in Bali, that you had the privilege or the fortitude, if you like, of actually being able to go and race on the race course over the preceding the weeks or the weeks leading up to the event. How important is that experience, do you find, being able to actually race on the course? I'm assuming you know it like the back of your hand now. Is that correct?
True. I mean, we have done that actually now, the 3 years we have done that together. We have been out on the course and completed it full. So we have divided it in three sessions and gone out and done the whole part. And for us, it's mentally good to do it. And it's also fun. We enjoy it.
And we highlight of the year.
Exactly. And we say to each other, why don't we go out and do this more often? Because it's so, so nice. We just love it.
I think, if I was to return, let's say in 2019, 2020, do you think I'd actually remember the course better this time around, having done it once before? Do you find that, obviously a lot of people, the classic thing to do in the swim run events is with the paddles is to actually write the course distances on the paddle. So you've got swim section 400 meters, run section 5.2 kilometers. Are you literally able to visualize exactly what the course looks like having done it so many times? Do you know it off, like say, like the back of your hand?
Perhaps we should be able
to. I would say, not all of it. Actually, when we were out, was it last year or this year? This year, I think we were, because we're training together with Christian's partner and his partner that also do the Tela, and they sort of run a little bit faster than us, and so we do the swim sessions together, but then they run their speed. And this year I think we ran wrong and they had to come back and fetch us. So it does happen. Wow. We don't know the course actually. So
yeah, of course, we had I was rather worried actually up in Bali that one of the teams, two great athletes from there in Sweden as well, Patrick and Fanny, they actually called themselves Team Lost. I was wondering, is that going to be a metaphor for what's about to happen to us going around Bali here? Are we going to get lost ourselves? And I think there's definitely that sort of almost like an orienteering aspect to the race, isn't there? Because it's, we're not talking massively commercialized triathlon racing here where you've got big signs and flashing lights, etc. But there's a couple of strobe lights with that first swim to manage your way across the thing. But you're looking for like little tags in the tree, aren't you? And going through for that. Is that something, have both of you got a bit of experience with orienteering? Are you pretty good map readers? Do you tend to navigate well?
It's good to always, when you have a new race, to look at the map so you visualize, you have some sort of sense where you're going in case there is something wrong. But most often, I would say you can see with the markers where you are going.
Just when you're out training on the course before it's marked.
This time there was no markers for us. Then it's hard. Yeah, because I mean, in the terrain now in Sweden, you can put up a race with markers, but you have to take it down after the race, so you can't be there.
Again, when we were over in Bali, obviously this being the first event over there, I remember being over on the Chenigan Island, and we got a little bit caught out there, didn't we? In the sense that the marshal on that particular corner wasn't sure whether we needed to go left or right, and I went into a big flap because I was thinking, oh my God, Team 3, Josh and Jackson are going to come and catch us up. Brad was my partner was very cool and calm and collected about it, and yourself and Peter, you looked very, very calm and collected. It was like, no, we'll just take it in our stride. Were you stressing at that point? Because I was stressing big time, thinking we're losing time here, we don't know which way to go, it's melting, the temperature is actually through the roof. How did you keep yourself calm in that moment, Annika?
Well, I mean, I realized it didn't make sense that we should make a turn there. It was, no, this is not right, we have to keep on going. So I had just in my mind the visualization of the map, so it should not be here a turn. That's just what I had reflected. So, but of course it is stressful if you don't know where to go. And we had one race actually this year, me and Christine, in Gothenburg in the west coast of Sweden, where we actually made a wrong turn in the last run, and we were tired and we just didn't pay attention, and we can't really understand when we came back to that point how could we miss it. But if you're tired, it's very easy to start and do wrong things. So you have to be on your toes all the time.
Totally, totally. I mean, and trust me, listeners, when you're tired out there, I almost feel like I was hallucinating. I remember coming up to this particular log in Sweden, and it was maybe only, let's say, 80 centimeters, maybe a meter off the ground. So a tree had fallen down. We hit this log and you had to climb over it. And I was so delirious and fatigued at that point. I just looked at this log and I spent about 30 seconds looking at it thinking, how am I going to get over this? And of course, had it been fresh, there'd been no problem whatsoever. I'd just throw my leg over, but I was worried about cramping and all this sort of stuff going on as well. So it's do not underestimate the levels of fatigue that you end up feeling in these particular events. So let's talk a little bit about equipment that you use. Obviously, Annika, you mentioned initially you didn't have any of these floaties, you didn't have any of these paddles. What is allowed in the event? And also, I'm quite interested in tethering as well, and your views on that, if you use it in every race and does it work for you, etc.
You can have a pull buoy and you can have paddles, you can have fins on. There's a certain length on the fins now. I don't remember how long, if it's 15 centimeters. But I mean, you have to consider that you have to take them on and off in every entrance in the transitions, which would make it quite time consuming, I would say. What else gear can you have? Like paddles, you don't have to have paddles. I see it as, if you don't train with paddles, you shouldn't have to have them in the swim run. You should get used to the paddles if you should have them in races. The pool boy is helping you. The pool boy is helping you because the shoes are dragging you a little bit, so the pool boy is helping you to float better. So that is nice to have, I would say. You don't have to either.
I think it's interesting to put some numbers on that, actually. There was a study done. Again, please tell me if I'm pronouncing this correctly. There's a trail running shop up there in Sweden, Lopplabet, is that right?
Yeah,
Loplabeth. Okay, yeah, sorry. And I think they'd done a study or wrote an article on various shoes. And what they were doing with this particular article, it was really quite interesting, was they had looked at the shoes for the benefits of how they would run. So whether they're stable, whether they're cushioned, how much grip they had, etc. But they also put in this new metric as well about how many seconds per 100 meters you would slow down using these shoes over not using the shoes. So of course you have to use the shoes. Some people in the early days, I believe, used to take the shoes off, but like you say, you've got to then put them on and off with every transition. You run the risk of getting sand and stones in there, etc. So most people, if I'm right in thinking, generally leave the shoes on. But the particular study showed they were adding around about 8 to 15 seconds per 100 meters by wearing the shoes, and that's even offset when you're using the pool buoy as well. So I think when you look at some of the times, you listeners, you might have looked at some of these races and you might have looked at some of the swim courses and think, I thought these guys were elite athletes. Why are they swimming only at 130 or 135 per 100 meters when you sort of maybe expect more like 115, 120 per 100 meters, especially over a long event like that? But the drag factor should not be underestimated. It is absolutely massive when you have these shoes on. And obviously the pool buoys, they come in various shapes and sizes. I'm using a double pool buoy at this myself at the moment, which creates a lot of flotation. But there is now a restriction. You mentioned back in the first race, the guys were using floating beds. They would literally carry them on their back, put them in the water, and then paddle across to the next island, which seems a little bit ludicrous to maybe people who are looking at the sport for the first time. But I think it was that level of ingenuity and that ability to experiment, which the sport is really very much embracing. And that's what attracted me to it. You know, I think the world of triathlon, I've been involved in triathlon since 1994. I find it become firstly a little bit commercialized, secondly a little bit sterile, and I think the adventure aspect of doing Ötele or the swim run as a sport itself is just so much more engaging for me personally. I just love that idea of, you know, doing this particular event, racing with somebody else and sharing that experience and being in nature with your partner, etc. It's just a completely different experience. And if anybody's listening to this and thinking about, oh, maybe I'll do it, I'm not sure about the equipment, I'm not sure about what it's going to entail, etc., my first point would just be to get out there and give one of these events a go and take it fairly casually as well. I did my first one was the Isles of Scilly race in 2016, which I did with one of my Swedish friends, Matti. And yeah, neither of us were particularly fit for that event, but we did it and we raised some money for his daughter, who is Stina, who is suffering from leukemia. And, you know, it was just a fantastic event to experience and get out there and do it for the first time. So when you're wearing all this equipment, I mentioned there briefly as well about tethering. So for those people who aren't used to swim run, what is the concept of tethering? Why do people join themselves together with a tether, with a band, with a rope between themselves?
I mean, all teams are different. For me and Annika, we have different strengths. So Annika is a very strong swimmer and she's taking the lead in the swimming sections. And I'm in the front on the running sections. And for us, we are connected to this tether from the start to the finish line. And it's natural for us, even though we don't always drag each other, we know where we have each other during the race.
Totally. I think that's definitely my shared experience with that and what I've been trying to help people who I've been coaching for these events is simply the idea that the tether itself, yes, it provides a bit of drag. So if you have a bit of an offset between two people who have very different swimming speeds, and I've done various races where I've either been the strongest swimmer or equally with Brad, who I race with on a regular basis and who I race with up in Bali, he's a super, super strong swimmer. So we've had the occasion where I've both dragged somebody else and being dragged as well. And the biggest thing that I find is just about the surety that it gives you, the confidence that you're actually still together, because obviously the race dictates that you must stay within 10 meters of each other. So just knowing that you're swimming along and your partner is definitely there because you can feel them on the end of this tether is a great, great thing. And again, it's another one of the aspects of the sport, which is maybe new and unfamiliar to a lot of people, but just provides that extra level of adventure and communication as well. I think I wrote... an article about my first experience doing the Scilly Isles, and I don't know if I coined the term or if I'd heard it somewhere else, and just in my subconscious it was there. It was literally like having like an umbilical cord, like a baby to its mother, being attached to each other, knowing that you're feeding off each other, both in terms of the physical nature of it and also the emotional challenges of doing these particular events, because they are hard, they are challenging, and just being able to communicate with your partner easily and give them reassurance that you're still there together, you're still in it as a team, is a really, really important aspect to that. So how do you see the sport, Annika, has evolved? You've been in it not right from the early days, but I'm sure in the last 6 years since you've been involved, you've seen it evolve a lot. And where do you think it might be heading?
Hard question, but I hope it will be evolving even more, and that people want to try it more, and that more strong people will come into the sport, so it gets the competition gets harder, and we'd like more women to join and be part of this as well, because I think the more fun for us is to compete women with women and not in the mixed team, I would say, and so I hope it will, more people will get started into this. And it's also spreading all over the world. We see races coming actually all over. Also, I see many races also in Australia. We've seen in South America, Uruguay is one. In the United States, it's coming more and more races. So I hope people will get to know the sport and wants to try it and get more competitive in it.
So for clarity purposes, obviously everyone knows Ertler as being the swim run world championships, but the sport itself is actually called swim run. And so just for clarity purposes, there are obviously races popping up which aren't necessarily Ertler branded events. Ertler means simply island to island, if I'm understanding that correctly. There are different operators out there, much the same as maybe Ironman and Challenge. The Ironman and Challenge series are two different operators running Iron distance events, so people can get involved with the events. Not necessarily doesn't have to be the Ertler race. Albeit I'd strongly recommend doing one of those because the experience is fantastic. But what I've seen in various swim runs that I've done outside of that particular brand is that people are just embracing the original message of those guys who actually did the very, very first swim run through the Stockholm Archipelago. And then obviously with Michael Lamel and Matt Scott, with what they've actually brought to it. I think one of my lasting memories of the Scilly Isles event was actually just being sat in that big tent, given the race briefing beforehand. And Michael Lamel, who's is a really big, tall, strapping mountain of a man, very lean, but a brilliant adventure racer. He just has this sort of godlike presence about him when he's in this venue, and he's talking about the importance of making sure that yes, we're immersed in nature, but we're making sure that we're not leaving wrappers and rubbish and trash on the course, etc. And that we're actually, you know, we're not racing. We've got a term over here, ladies, called not racing for sheep stations. And what that simply implies is that yes, everybody's competitive, and if everyone wants to do as well as what they can do, but we're not going to be cutthroat about it. If you've got a partner out there or somebody's out there on the course and they're struggling, you stop and you help them and you give them aid, etc., as opposed to maybe just turning a blind eye in a triathlon because you're 10 seconds behind your PB or whatever it might be. So, you know, I think that aspect of the sport is really, really quite strong. And I'm sure that message will carry across quite strongly. Have you seen a change in the demographic, like the age of the athletes in the last 6 to 7 years? I mean, my sort of feel for it is that there seems to be a lot of people in that sort of 35 to maybe say late 40 category who, like me, seem to have, you know, maybe tried triathlon and just looking for something new, a different experience. I was quite surprised. Obviously, we all got a good run for our money with Josh and Jackson there in Bali. They were 22 and 28 years respectively. But I think the younger athletes who can really dominate, obviously with their strength and with their fitness, they're yet to start to filter into the sport. Would I be right in thinking that?
Yeah, it's correct. Many of us racing today is coming from different sports backgrounds. I think everyone, we have been racing before and we want to do want to have another dimension to racing, not just the physical performance, but also some kind of experience. But I hope, I mean, in Sweden, they organize races for kids nowadays, and I think it will be different in 10 years when if the sport continue to evolve.
And also it becomes more, I mean, becoming more sprint races. I mean, many of these until qualifying races are quite long. It's more like 30K running or 6-7K of swimming, which is a tough race. So they're becoming more sprint races that are maybe 1 to 2 hours, which is good for people to try, I would say.
Totally. Now, I noticed as well that some races being advertised is you can do this event by yourself as opposed to with a duo partner. Have either of you tried one of those events where you do it by yourself? Maybe the Hell's Garden series? Is that something you can do by yourself if you want to?
Yeah, the Hell's Garden, that race you can do by yourself. I have only done it tethered as well, trying to practice for another race. So, but I have never done actually one on my own. No, I don't think so.
And Kristin, yourself? Or?
No, I haven't. And I think, I mean, one of the dimensions to swimrun is that you're racing in a team. It's really a team sport. It's not like two athletes racing together. It's you really have to help each other during the race. And I think like we are some people from the adventure racing background, and why we have been able to perform, although we can't really swim that properly or we don't have the same background as the triathletes, I think it's because we have this teamwork. We are used to help each other and taking help. That's probably the hardest part, that to realize that, I'm feeling really bad now. I have to take help from my partner.
Yes, definitely. Yeah. It's an interesting concept because when I first looked at it, I must admit I was one of those people who thought, I'm not sure if I can find a partner. I'd prefer to do it by myself. It just seems easier. It's, you know, I'm in control of my own destiny if I'm doing it by myself. But you've only got to do one of these races where you take the plunge and you partner up with somebody to realize exactly why this sport is done with a partner. And like you say, it becomes a team event. I think that's the cool thing about it. You know, typically endurance events are so solo events. We've been conditioned to believing that's how they should all be done. But to add this team element to it, albeit with just a single partner, it really just changed the dynamic significantly. And I'll never forget crossing the finish line on that first race in the Isles of Scilly with Matty. And, Matt's and Michael are there to celebrate and give you a big man hug across the finish line. I'd never, ever experienced that in a triathlon, you know, to actually have the race organizers come up to you and give you a big cuddle on the finish in line and say, hey, well done, that's fantastic that you've done that. And it definitely feels for me the sport, and I'm sure it will evolve, but for me the sport right now, and I hear many people saying this, it feels like what triathlon felt like 20-25 years ago. I've been into it 24 years now, and I think in those early days there's a lot of small races, and you know, it was the cost of entry was actually relatively affordable as well for those particular triathlon events, etc. And it just had this much more of a sort of community feel about it. And, you know, maybe some of that movement away from that sensation is just how the sport has actually evolved. So it'd be really interesting to sort of see if the swim run movement does maintain those roots. And I really hope it does for sure. So if you're trying to encourage anybody, I'm sure both of you, I know certainly Annika, having met you properly over in Bali, you're a very, very inspirational person. How would you encourage somebody to get involved in the sport? What would be the first thing they'd need to do?
I mean, it was very interesting to see everyone at Bali, because me and Peter and you guys were the only one who had done swimrun, and you could see the how nervous people are about swimming with the shoes and how do you do that and all the questions around it. And it's trying to get people to understand it's not so hard. It's just to get out there and test it. It's not such a big deal. You can swim with any kind of shoes. Just get out there and try it. And So it is not so hard, but I understand the feeling before you have tried it. So it's try and communicate with people that it's not so hard. Just get out and try it.
Definitely. I think, are there any sort of organizations or websites where people that you know of that people can go and learn a little bit more about it? It's certainly something which I think, I'm getting asked myself more and more about, how do you train for this event? What equipment do you need? I feel like there needs to be some resources, and I think those resources are starting to come. But are there any that you know of off the top of your head where you'd sort of say, if your friend came up to you and you maybe didn't have too long to actually speak to them, what would be a recommendation? Where would they go?
I mean, we have in Sweden summertime, well, not only summertime, but from May until September, October, there are events, organized events, basically every week. I have close by to me a very small lake that we meet up every Tuesday, and it's a very short lap you do around this lake. I think it sums up maybe to, well, less than 2K, and you do how many rounds you want, and you just do it for practice, and it's to try and find these different organizations that you can find. In Sweden, we have different. I know around Stockholm and in the West Coast as well. Just to come and try it, basically.
Yeah, totally. I think what we'll do is we'll try and put a link to some of those areas that people can sort of find out a little bit more. I think one of the, it seems like one of the biggest learning tools these days is obviously the YouTube platform. There's nothing better than just sitting down and watching some of that that footage, some of that documentation about the races, and you get a really good, clear idea of what that looked like. And what I've got here just before we sort of summarize and round up, because I appreciate, ladies, you've got a very busy schedule and need to crack on. But I've just got a 30-second segment here from the 2017 Ertelur World Championships from the notorious Pig Swim. Now, the commentary team for this particular event are absolutely fantastic. And I know all my friends and family who were following me in the 2018 event were just saying how good the coverage was. They really felt like they were immersed with it. So I'm just going to play this 30-second video clip or audio clip. I'm sure you'll be able to hear it when it comes through. You'll know it as being, the conditions that you're experiencing during the Pig Swim when both of you are racing and going on to win the particular event. Once we've finished hearing this, can you maybe just relay some of your emotions taking you back to that particular race? Because as I started off by saying today, 2018 was a very easy year, in inverted commas, to do the event, but 2017 was almost the complete opposite. So here we go. Let's have a quick listen to this.
Out on the Pig Swim, 1.4 kilometres, heavy, heavy wave. Those are the top three men's teams there, and they are neck and neck and neck out at the front of the field there. If you look at the size of that wave, I mean, essentially you'd want to be reaching for your surfboard here rather than anything else, but they've no surfboards out there. They could have brought one with them, but of course they would have to bring it over the finish line.
So how does that bring back any strong memories from the particular event, 2017?
Definitely. 2017, I'm very happy we were racing that year because it creates so strong memories. It's hard to recall the feeling during the Pig Swim because it's extremely cold, and you know that you have to swim this. This Pig Swim is 1.4 kilometer, but then you have just a short run, and then you have almost 1K swimming again, and that's almost the hardest part because you never get the heat up, and it's hard to move your legs and your body because you're so stiff.
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot of emotions when you hear this because it's sort of, I know the swim parts there, it's sort of my I have to put the lead on this and push hard because I need to help Christine on this. And the Pig Swim was hard, and I had to really go deep to really pull it through because I got really cold, freezing, shivering. And when I get this cold, I always start counting my strokes because I know that every stroke will take me further to the goal. So it's sort of But as Christine said, it's not the Pig Swim itself that is the hardest. It's the 1K swim very close by after that you really have to put mentally through to manage. But then after that, you can start and relax swim-wise, I would say.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. I mean, having seen yourself and Peter Aronson in Bali, training up for the Bali swim-run event, I was absolutely blown away by technically how good your open water swimming is. We did a little, we said goodbye to you, actually. Here's a little cheeky story. We said goodbye to you and myself and Brad casually walked off, but we actually hid in the bushes and watched you go for your training swim together. And I was very, very impressed with your stroke style because it would have been perfectly suited, I'm sure, to the race in 2017. Listeners, for your benefit, Annika has quite a straight higher arm recovery over the top of the water and a relatively quick turnover, quick stroking rate, which makes her very, very good in the rough, choppy open water, just because it gives her the momentum to pull through and keep herself moving. Annika, we actually have a term for this. We've got a system which we call swim types, where we've identified six different types of swimmer based essentially on what's holding them back. And one of those swim types at the top of our paradigm, if you like, is what we call the swinger. And it has almost like a derogatory term, does the swinger, but we see it as being almost the optimal stroke style for swimming well in rough, choppy water, just because of the momentum that you get and the rhythm that you generate from it. And interestingly enough, my other observation was that Peter would have been more of your classic smooth. So he tends to have more of a sort of classic high elbow recovery, very long strokes. But that was well suited to him in the sense that he's a tall guy, big broad shoulders, big hands, and has a very, very strong pool swimming background as well there. Is that something you've had to work on yourself, or is it just a natural style which you think you developed?
No, I haven't worked anything on that particular. It's just naturally coming to me, I would say.
Wow, that's fantastic. And like I say, it was a real pleasure to actually watch that in motion. And it definitely put the frighteners on me and Brad, thinking, oh my goodness, you know, we've got to try and take on board this Swedish duo here who are looking very, very strong in the open water as well. So there we go. Yes. And just finally then, before you shoot off, do you have a race schedule plan for 2019? How soon do you think about entering these events, anything that you've got lined up for the future?
Like Attila, this year we said, because you have to find, since we've done it so many times now, especially I, we have to think, what is motivating us? Why do we want to do this again? And for us this year, we said to ourselves, we never said out openly that we can do below 9 hours. That's what's actually our goal. And after 2017, we said to each other, we can do this much better, because our time was not so good. We were not really pleased with that. So we said that we can do it much better, and that we managed to do under 9 hours this year was just absolutely massive.
Yeah.
And it was, I mean, everything was on our side, the conditions, and we were in good shape, both of us and everything. So that's why we have to think, what can we do better next year? What motivates us? So we have to talk about this ourselves, and we haven't set the plan yet. We'll see.
Yeah, well, that's very exciting stuff. Did you actually have any high? I'm sure you had lots of highs in the 2018 race, but did either of you suffer any low points? I know I certainly mentioned, you're probably getting sick of me sounding like a broken record, mentioning all the lows that I had, just kept burning up and running out of steam and then coming back and fighting back, etc. But you both look like you're perfectly in motion, literally working as one great unit there together. Did you have any low points at all during 2018, or were you just thinking, this is it, we're going to nail this time, we're going to knock out 9 hours and all's going to be good?
I mean most of the races, it's very long races, so during every race you have very low points, you have the high points. So but in the end, we have always, I think, thanks to our experience and our motivation, we have always been able to finish it off well and been satisfied at the finish line.
Like earlier this year, we had very good competition with Fanny Dankwart and Desiree, and they were ahead of us. We were after them for a while, and we didn't stress at all, which I'm surprised how well we did that. We were so really calm, and we knew that it's a lot of, I mean, the race is long. You can't push too hard really at this point. And we knew that if we just keep a steady pace, we will finish it off good, I think. So
yeah. We were actually neck and neck with Fanny in the pig swim. And again, another vivid memory for me was her. She's got her paddles on. She's actually got them in the blue and yellow Swedish flag. So every time a hand would come out of the water, we were literally side by side. It should just flash this hand up against us. And I'm thinking, oh, yeah, we've got to try and edge against them. And they're both obviously Olympic swimmers. So, you know, I think bringing that into the sport as well, you're definitely going to see some really strong swimmers come into the sport, and obviously some real strong trail runners, I would imagine, as well, starting to dominate, especially over that particular event where the swim to run ratio is quite heavily favored towards the runners for sure. Okay, well, ladies, it's been absolutely lovely speaking to both of you. Thank you so much for your time coming on the show, and I'm sure all our listeners will be very, very appreciative of the time and insight that you've given us into the show. And we'll just myself and Adam just like to wish you both a very happy Christmas and a very prosperous new year. And I hope to see you in the new year at one of these races somewhere along the line. So thank you very much for coming on the show.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure. Happy New Year to you too.
Well, listeners, we hope you really enjoyed the show there and the interview with Annika Eriksson and Kristen Larsson of Swim Run World Fame. We'd like to just apologize for a little bit of background noise there, especially when Kristen was talking. We hope it came through okay, though, and you were able to understand and listen fully there. We'd also like to say a big happy Christmas, or Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year, I should say. I always seem to get those two the wrong way around. But yes, Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. We hope you have a prosperous year going forwards there. Do please make sure that you drop us over an email. Let us know how you've been enjoying the show. If you've got any ideas for future shows or people you'd like to hear from, we'll try and reach out to them and try and get them onto the show for you. Any information you want to drop across like that, please email through to adam@swimsmooth.com and he'll collate it for us, and we'll make sure we get it in a future episode there. Also, if you do have any favorable reviews and feedback that you can put up on iTunes or wherever it is that you listen to your podcasts, every little helps, of course. So without further ado, let me wish you a happy Christmas, Merry Christmas, and a Happy New Year. And we'll be speaking to you very soon again. Thanks then. Bye now.